There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast. And today I'm going to talk about Nazi propaganda and the Reich Ministry of Popular Enlightenment and Propaganda run by Joseph Goebbels. Now, the reason why I want to talk about this today is because it's one of those aspects of the study of the Third Reich that gets covered kind of endlessly in school history lessons. But is highly mythologized and misunderstood. There are huge generalizations about it, and also there are huge generalizations about the reach and the efficacy and the power of Nazi propaganda. The idea that Nazi propaganda had this quality of kind of being able to brainwash, when actually the German population was far more selective with its interaction with films and posters and public art and all these kinds of things. Much as people now find themselves negotiating and interacting with advertising and political propaganda of all sorts. So the relationship that Germans had with Nazi propaganda was quite nuanced. One of the reasons why we get this this view of Nazi propaganda and indoctrination is because at the time the likes of Goebbels believed that it was believed it was deeply indoctrinating, and the extent to which it shifts popular attitudes is much less certain and clear and much more ambiguous. Anyway, today we're reading from Noakes and Pridham's Nazism, a Documentary Reader, Volume 2. Now, if you were studying Nazi Germany at any level, probably from A-level upwards, Noakes and Pridham, they wrote a series of four books from 1933 to 1945, and they're pretty indispensable. They are absolutely superb guides, and they're well worth getting, and they're really, really worthwhile getting if you're teaching as well. So, Noakes and Pridham write, Goebbels had long seen his own Nazi Party Reich propaganda directorate formed in 1930 as the model for a future Reich propaganda ministry, and Hitler himself had already referred to the need for such a ministry in negotiations over Nazi participation in government during 1932. After the election of the 5th of March 1933, the cabinet was quickly pressured into approving a decree establishing a Reich Ministry of Popular Enlightenment and Propaganda, which came into law on the 13th of March and defined the task of the new ministry as the spreading of enlightenment and propaganda within the population concerning the policy of the Reich government and the national reconstruction of the German fatherland. Goebbels, the new minister, was not particularly happy for psychological reasons with the use of the term propaganda and in the title, and in May 1934 tried to have it replaced by the word culture. However, the Reich Minister of Education and Science objected to this, and in any case Hitler insisted on the retention of the word propaganda. Soon after his appointment, Goebbels outlined his view of the role of the new ministry at his first press conference on the 15th of March 1933. And it is to that press conference we shall turn in a moment. But coming back to this question of the word culture, Goebbels was very keen on the idea of there being some kind of cultural, existential revolution in Germany following the appointment of Hitler in January 1933. He said with the effect of that the Nazi revolution must be a total revolution. There can be no bystanders, there can be no people who reluctantly accept it. There must be full and complete enthusiasm from across the population, and that Nazism will reach down into every question, every area of life, and every question about life, the purpose of life. And the purpose of life in Germany would be the purpose of pursuing racial destiny, that social relations would be defined by race and nothing else, and that the revolution that the Nazis were seeking to bring about was a kind of an existential but also kind of like a biological revolution. Of course, all these ideas are ridiculous, and that there is no kind of racial or biological framework upon which one can realistically reshape society. But the fact that ideas are absurd doesn't really matter at a moment of intense kind of rupture, where one system of notionally kind of liberal internationalism has been shattered worldwide and overthrown in Germany, and is being replaced by a kind of an extremist right-wing putsch. So, to the press conference. This is on the 15th of March 1933. I see in the setting up of the new Ministry of Popular Enlightenment and Propaganda by the government a revolutionary act insofar as the new government is no longer intends to leave the people to their own devices. The government is in the true sense of the word a people's government. It arose out of the people and will always execute the will of the people. I reject most passionately the idea that this government stands for reactionary aims, that we are reactionaries. We want to give the people their due, though admittedly in another form than occurred under parliamentary democracy. So this idea that Goebbels is putting forward, that firstly, the government will not leave the people to their own devices, the idea that people coming up with their own ideas and their own viewpoints on life is not what a government should tolerate or what a government should allow, and that the role of government really is to shape thought. This was obviously a profoundly anti-democratic, a profoundly anti-individualist notion, but one which had actually significant traction, not just in Germany, but in other European states at the time, and that the government had a role in shaping popular thought. In more democratic countries, there was a similar sentiment, that new means of mass communication should help guide popular thought within certain acceptable parameters, and with the ideological and social threats of the Russian Revolution and the rise of Bolshevism, the idea that it was a positive thing to shape public thoughts away from kind of more dangerous concepts to the social order was definitely prevalent, not just in Nazi Germany. The idea that the government had risen from the people's will, well, it hadn't risen from a majority of the people's will, and at no point does Hitler win an overall majority in any election in Germany. But, of course, Nazism, containing elements of extreme right-wing populism, always looks to an imagined popular mandate, an imagined idea of simply being the expression of what is a legitimate voice of the people anyway. And that the idea also that Goebbels puts forward, and this is partly from the kind of the political heritage of Goebbels that had been far more inclined before he discovered the Nazis, towards Soviet-style socialism, and the idea of revolutions as opposed to kind of extreme reactionary conservatism. And he had simply taken the kind of the radical energy of the revolutionary left and then tried to apply that to the right. And that he rejects this idea of Nazism being reactionary. By the time, by the way, by the time 1933 comes around, he has long since abandoned any adherence to anything on the left at all, and has embraced fascism wholeheartedly. He goes on to say, in the newly established Ministry of Popular Enlightenment and Propaganda, I envisage the link between regime and people, the living contact between the national government as the expression of the people's will and the people themselves. In the past few weeks, we have seen an increased coordination between Reich policy and the policy of the states, and in the same way, I view the first task of the ministry as being to establish coordination between the government and the whole people. So that was a fascinating look into Nazi thinking about the role of propaganda, is coordinating the whole people, and is creating this link, this dialogue between the regime, which is the expression of the people, and the people themselves. This is, you know, in Goebbels' view, the kind of the regime and the people having some sort of dialogue. The reality, of course, is it's nothing of the sort. It is a anti-democratic regime looking to influence public thought to its own ends. The difficulty that Goebbels faces is that propaganda does not do, and people do not react towards propaganda in the way that he thinks. The very simplistic ideas that were prevalent at the start of the 20th century on the shaping of the public mind, you can look at all this in kind of understanding modern advertising and the likes of Edward Bernays and stuff like that, so who came up with the term propaganda, was that individuals would, if given the right message in the right way, accept the message wholeheartedly and fundamentally change their thoughts and feelings and beliefs. There are various, and this is more kind of a media studies conversation, various kind of reception models of propaganda, where there is the assumption, and now utterly kind of abandoned, this assumption that we simply kind of have like almost information injected into us with, I think it was Marshall McLuhan talked about there being like a hypodermic syringe. If it's not Marshall McLuhan, by the way, please do write in and correct, because a long time since I taught media studies. Anyway, it's now generally seen that people react towards political propaganda, corporate propaganda, you know, advertising, in very selective ways. There are ideas people already believe in that it's possible to reinforce, and things that people don't believe in that they will often reject, or that won't sit well with them, or that will take a long time to persuade them of some of a new kind of idea. Things that people filter out, things that people accept that might be true but they don't like very much, or reject but choose to remain quiet about. And what Hitler had wanted was this existential change in the German people, something that's perhaps even almost completely impossible to bring about, where
a lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The German people, as one, would embrace new racial ideas as the kind of the core tenet of their entire being. And of course, most people's deepest thoughts relate to profoundly individualistic impulses. You know, my economic needs, my social needs, my cultural needs, all these kinds of things. Hitler and Goebbels believed it was possible to transcend or to break down individualism itself. And instead of creating a socialist collectivism, a class-based collectivism, creating a racial collectivism itself, asking people to sacrifice whatever it took for the greatness of the racial community, for the greatness of the Aryan gene pool. So here we're going to hear just briefly about radio and the fact that even before the appointment of Hitler in January 1933, radio had been a massively important factor in the Nazi propaganda machine. Hitler believed that the spoken word was much more effective than the written one, and that people would by and large listen to speeches more than they would read them. Radio was one of the kind of the totems of modernity in the 1930s, this incredible way of channeling information into private spaces that had never really been possible before. So that radio could be put into private homes, and you could reach people in a place politically that you'd never gone to before. So Hitler managed to mobilize the Nazi Reich Ministry of the Interior to instruct the Reich Radio Commissioner and the State Radio Commissioners to broadcast the torchlight procession that was held on the 30th of January 1933 to celebrate the new Nazi government coming to power. And that, I suppose, was the first major use of state power and radio together in order to propagate Nazism. During this event, the Bavarian radio station interrupted the broadcast when it became apparent that the celebration was actually being used for party political purposes. There was a brief moment of resistance very quickly to be overcome. And it was this incident that showed a major problem that faced Goebbels, which in his attempt to concentrate power of the power of radio into simply his hands. And that was the fact that the radio had a federal structure, and that the Reich was only limited to control through the Reich Radio Commissioner. And this simply, the Reich Radio Commissioner was allowed to control radio broadcasts that related to central government ministries, and not over things that happened in places like Bavaria, or the way in which news was broadcast in places like Bavaria. So the Reich Ministry of Propaganda and Public Enlightenment would be the tool with which radio could be coordinated. Radio would transition out of the hands of the Ministry of the Interior and into the Reich Propaganda Ministry Which would therefore have much more kind of coordinating power. This was not favoured by Goering, who was the Prussian Ministry of the Interior, as well as his various other kind of portfolio jobs. And no Nazi particularly wished to lose control over any useful tool for extending their own personal power as well, of which kind of radio censorship was one. Finally, from April the 1st, 1934, German radio was unified into the Reich Radio Company. And this meant that previous radio stations were just branches of the Reich Radio Company, and they were known as Reich Radio Stations. And the Reich Radio Company became a subordinated to Department 3 of the Propaganda Ministry, which covered broadcasting. In practice, the key figure in German radio was the Reich Director of Broadcasting, a man by the name of Eugen Hadamowski, who was appointed head of the Reich Radio Company on the 8th of July 1933. And with centralisation, obviously, came purges. A great number of experienced radio personnel lost their jobs. The directors of the Reich Radio Company and the controllers of state radio stations were purged. And there were, in the first 6 months of 1933, 270 dismissals from broadcasting staff across Germany. This amounted to 13% of the total broadcasting staff across Germany. This kind of mirrors the civil service purge that happened at the same time, but it's a bigger percentage. On the 25th of March 1933, Goebbels spoke directly to the controllers of German radio, and he said, "We make no bones about the fact that the radio belongs to us and to no one else. And we will place the radio in the service of our ideology, and no other ideology will find expression here. The radio must subordinate itself to the goals which the government of the National Revolution has set itself. The government will give the necessary instructions. I consider radio to be the most modern and the most crucial instrument that exists for influencing the masses. I also believe, one should not say that out loud, that radio will in the end replace the press." So Goebbels was able to be quite explicit a lot of the time about the ideological and propagandist purposes that he wished to subject the mass media. Later propagandists have been more canny, realising that the best propaganda is the one that people don't really realise as being explicitly political, the best propaganda being hidden. He goes on to say, first principle, at all costs avoid being boring. I put that before everything. So do not think that you have the task of creating the correct attitudes, of indulging in patriotism, of blasting out military music and declaiming patriotic verse. No. That is not what this new orientation is all about. Rather, you must help to bring forth a nationalist art and culture which is truly appropriate to the pace of modern life and the mood of the times. The correct attitudes must be conveyed, but that does not mean they must be boring. And simply because you have the task of taking part in this national enterprise, you do not have carte blanche to be boring. You must use your imagination, an imagination which is based on sure foundations and which employs all means and methods to bring to the ears of the masses the new attitude in a way which is modern and up to date. Interesting and appealing, interesting, instructive, but not schoolmasterish, radio must never go down with the proverbial disease. The intention is clear and it puts you off. So one of the things that Goebbels learned later on, again, about cinema, was that films such as Triumph of the Will by Leni Riefenstahl, whilst these were beloved of Hitler, and Hitler really enjoyed seeing the Nuremberg rallies and marching bands and all that sort of stuff, The audiences were generally turned off by it. They found it tedious. Much as Goebbels understood about radio, that most of the time, most people wished to be entertained, and that it was possible to integrate entertainment and a political or ideological message in one go. And that was the key to causing or bringing about a spirit of engagement with a mass audience. He understood this about radio right away. It actually took the Nazis quite a while to understand that openly bombastic propaganda films and also speeches by the Führer were not interesting to the majority of the population. By the mid-1930s, many Germans had begun to sort of mentally, if not actually, tune out Hitler's speeches and try to find ways to avoid them, which had little to do with Hitler's oratory and more to do with the fact that most people, at most times, do not wish to engage with political broadcasting. Radio was placed strategically in public places, and there were announcements when the Führer would be speaking. In the local paper, for example, in Neue Eisenberg, near Frankfurt, on the 16th of March, there was an advert saying, "Attention, the Führer is speaking on the radio. On Wednesday the 21st of March, the Führer is speaking on all German stations from 11 to 11:50 a.m. According to a regulation of the Gau headquarters, the district party headquarters, has ordered that all factory owners, department stores, offices, shops, pubs and blocks of flats put up loudspeakers an hour before the broadcast of the Führer's speech so that the whole workforce and all national comrades can participate fully in the broadcast. The district headquarters expects this to be obeyed without exception so that the Führer's wish to speak to the people can be implemented." And it was more complicated to speak to the people than Hitler had perhaps envisaged. And what we'll do next time is we'll look at how the Nazis attempted to use the newspapers to carry their message as well, again, with differing degrees of success. Anyway, I hope you found this useful, and I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. Thanks very much. All the best. Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.